Okay, everyone. Hello. Hello, hello. Just seeing everyone here in the gallery. It is the 5th of November. It's the year 2024. And we are on to, we're zooming through. We've got training call number 6, and we're going over anger and healthy aggression part 2. So you would have had part 1 a couple weeks ago, and we're going to dive into a bit more detail. Some quotes that are my favorite quotes around anger and healthy aggression. And before we start, what I will do is just get everyone who's here live and also on the recording. So thanks to all coming on to the recording after the fact to just go through some of your basic nervous system health basics. So I'll do that too, as always. So just noticing where you are in space. So whether you're on a chair, couch, maybe you're outside. Some of you might be in your car, bedroom, kitchen. Is it light or dark? So, is it the day or is it midday? Is it evening? So, just take note of the time of day and the light or the lack of light that might be outside. And how's your breath? How's your breathing? Is it in your awareness? Were you aware of it before I mentioned breath or breathing? How's your temperature? How's your body temperature? Is it neutral, a bit warm, cool? Are parts of your body cooler than the others? Maybe your hands are cooler or warmer, feet might be cooler or warmer. So listen to just that basic physiology and see if your system needs any support, if it needs to cool down, if it needs to warm up. And I'm bringing this into your awareness because these are some of the biological impulses that we want to start really noticing. This comes way, way back to those elements of following your impulse, your biological impulse. And if we go back to infancy, we think about a newborn, they need help regulating their temperature through being warmed up, cooled down. And so that's one of the key entryways into just listening to our nervous system is to really notice our temperature. Or when we're moving a bit more, we might sweat. That's a good thing. When we're cold, we might shiver. That's a good thing. Hairs might stand up if we're cool. So, even just that little notice of temperature helps us get more connected to our physiology, our nervous system. And that's like an easy way into noticing things like our stress response, right? When our, I know you've all done, or most of you have come through the kidney adrenal lessons. Those can sometimes be harder to notice. Like, are my adrenals and kidneys tight? Is my back tight? Is that because I've strained my back or is it because I've been stressed? And so being able to listen and listen, these are the interoception, another word you've learned, interoception, this ability to notice your internal environment. Just seeing in the chat, there's still some people really having trouble hearing me. So I'm just going to turn up my gain. Hopefully, this isn't too loud. Is that better? Better? Okay, better. Thanks, guys. Think sometimes a fairy comes in here and turns down my volume gain. I never touch it. I'm not sure why it does that. And I've been gone for 3 weeks. So thank you. All right. So as we go through the topic today, the theory, as always, as with all the learning, just connecting to these physiological responses, listening, noticing, allowing your impulse to move towards more comfort. Right, more resources. Don't underestimate how powerful it is for you to connect to your needs and get them met via yourself, right? Whether it's hunger, temperature, fatigue, energy, needing to connect, needing to ask for help, needing for space, needing for quiet. So all this stuff, as simple as it might be, is exactly what babies get or want, I should say, what they need when they're young and when they're dependent on their caregivers. And if we didn't get that, this is a new thing for us to listen to these things and offer ourselves these needs, these resources, these shifts to make ourselves more comfortable. So wanted to just review that. So back to the training call pages. So page one at the very, very top there, I have a little note, review, anger is medicine, additional resources. There are some articles and such within the anger and healthy aggression areas of the lab, specifically the voo ah sounds that you're going to get into. There's a great article that my husband Seth wrote on titrating healthy aggression and getting into our aggression. So these are all great additional resources. We have some videos also within those labs and lessons showing healthy displays of healthy aggression, movement. So be sure to review those as needed. The first sentence here, why is working with the emotion anger? So we'll get into the first sentence here. Why is working with the emotion anger and developing healthy? That's the word, healthy. Aggression. So, why is working with the emotion anger and developing healthy aggression one of the toughest things to unwrap? Why is it so, I'm going to say, tough and difficult? It really is one of those conundrums in our current human society. My personal sense is we are trying to teach and learn something that we rarely see modeled in a positive, and the next word, powerful way. Powerful way. And so we'll get into this deeper into this call. So it just is something that we typically don't see. We either see one version, which is explosion and violence and rage and bad stuff that occurs, or nothing, no emotional tone at all. And usually, when we don't have healthy aggression, we also don't have healthy. We could say happiness and sadness and joy and all the things that go within the spectrum of human emotion. So this is the next paragraph here. I'm going to read this out. I found this in a book written by a gentleman by the name of Mark Thurston. He is a specialist on the work of Edgar Cayce. Some of you might know who Edgar Cayce was. He is long past. He was an American. He died in 1945. He was considered one of the first holistic people in the late 1800s in the United States. He was a bit of a psychic, but he was very good at diagnosing people and treating them without really having to see them. Kind of crazy, but this is what he did. For those on the East Coast, he was based at Virginia Beach near Norfolk, and his history is pretty cool. And he knew a lot of things, I think, that we're starting to figure out around health and emotion and energy. But this is what Mark Thurston writes about anger and how Cayce saw anger. So I'll read this. So anger is an emotion directly related to saying no. Of course, he isn't saying we need to go and run around blowing our stacks every day, but he did emphasize the need to express anger in the right way. And then this is him quoting, and he was a fairly Christian religious man, so this is why this speech is a little different. He says, "Be angry, but sin not, for he that never is angry is worth little." But then Casey adds how important it is to have a container for that anger. And then he quotes, "But he that is angry and controlleth it not is worthless." Note here that control does not mean suppression, but proper direction. It's a crucial distinction. So this ability to express the energy, the life force of anger, boundaries, saying no, speaking up for ourselves, we want it to be directed in a positive, healthy way, very different than blowing up and raging and being violent, and also different than keeping it all inside and fuming inside and not expressing. And we know through a lot of the work in Gabor Maté, some of you know of his name, physician that's actually was based out of Vancouver here. He wrote a book called When the Body Says No, and that book is a great one of the best books, I think, talking about the connection with chronic illness, autoimmune disease, cancer, heart disease, all these things, high blood pressure, and basically stored trauma and emotion. And he has a big chapter on that book on anger, parts about anger, and just how when we suppress our anger, it really does make us sick because it's big energy, right? So if you can imagine storing a tiger in a cage forever, and we know this when you go to zoos, these animals get very sick because they're suppressed and they're not able to hunt and run and do the things that they're meant to do. They get very sick. And when they're out in the wild, they thrive, they're healthy. So we are the same, right? Of course, we have a little more civilization on our side, which can be tricky and good at the same time. So, how do we find this nice balance? Going back to that first sentence, this ability to really have powerful anger that is expressive, contained, but not suppressed. And in many ways, working through SBSM and getting through the labs and lessons and growing capacity, this will create really healthy life force energy. And I know some of you are new here. You haven't quite reached that pinnacle of feeling healthy aggression come out spontaneously. Some of the alumni here, you guys know that you have. And it's almost like getting the best gift ever when you can really feel that organic impulse, let it flow out, release it, and have more energy afterwards. And it goes back to those little people, babies, toddlers. When they can really express their anger and their healthy aggression, they also feel themselves. They're like, I'm here, I'm powerful, and I can do this. So, the other thing with anger is it has this ability to really put ourselves forward. Aggression, and I think this was covered in the first call on healthy anger and aggression, the root of the word aggression is aggredi, which is Latin, and that means to move forward, to push forward. And so this also connects not to just healing, but also our ability to do what is right for us, whether it's relationship, career, cleaning our house, whatever we need to do, right? So this all connects. So next line, let me just have a little sip of water. So in the nervous system and somatic experiencing worlds, Peter Levine explains titration as, so this is I'm going to bring in titration now, which is that ability to do little bits and little bits and little bits of work and not overload the system. So I'm bringing in titration here. So he says, we use titration to create increasing stability, resilience, and organization. Titration is about carefully touching into the smallest drop of survival-based arousal and other difficult sensations to prevent re-traumatization. I use the term titration, this is of course Peter talking, to denote the gradual stepwise process of trauma renegotiation. So this is from his book, In an Unspoken Voice. So I wanted to put in this
paragraph or this long sentence on titration in relationship to anger, because we have often been taught that to release anger, you got to go and you got to hit, things and go into an anger room and scream and just go crazy. And while that might feel good in the moment, it's too much with a system that has been not well contained and not able to sense all the trickles of energy and emotion that come out. And so, just as for some of us, we have to do step by step by step internal processing of, say, sensations, pain, things that we're not used to sensing interoceptively, we also need to step by step, drop by drop, increase our ability to feel these elements of healthy aggression, movement, and I'll get more into that as we get into the call today. But we want to do these small drops so that we don't overactivate, and as Peter says in this paragraph, re-traumatize our system. And I do think that that's happening in a lot of cases where people are going and doing these anger releases or these big breathwork sessions. And I've seen this time and time again. They come out, and often people are overstimulated or they're dissociated. And they don't realize they're going into those overactivations because they haven't done the work to really listen to the internal sensations. Let's go to page number two. So, titration and practice. And by the way, you all have been titrating this whole time in SBSM. This is the lessons that are, orienting and following impulse and noticing the joints and noticing little pieces. It's not one big 5-hour audio lesson where you're learning everything in one moment, right? So you're naturally learning titration by doing one lesson and then letting that integrate. And then a couple of days later, you do another lesson. Maybe a couple of days later, you do some theory. So this is how we learn little bits and pieces, and then we integrate it. So titration and practice. So the first line here, when practicing, experimenting, and living, that's the word, living, we want to navigate our experiences so that sensations and activations, that's the word, so arousal, stimuli, stress, life, settle on a case-by-case basis. What that means, it kind of comes back to my favorite old example of if you stub your toe on a coffee table. Remember this example I gave ages ago? I bumped my elbow the other day on a door frame. There's always reminders in our life to, feel that stop, that when those things happen, rather than pushing through, you pause. You don't have to necessarily sit down, but you stop, you feel the activation, you feel the pain. You notice, you sense your feet, you sense what your breath wants to do. Are there any emotions that want to come out? You look around, and once that pain, that sting, that sensation, the heat has shifted, then you go on with life. Sometimes when we have something so benign, like we bump our elbow or we hit our toe, and maybe some of you have experienced this, you like break down crying, like the world just came to an end. Has anybody ever experienced that? The tiniest little thing, and you're like, why am I in a puddle of tears because I just stubbed my toe? This can be an indication that this is a little hit into all the times when we were young, years before, where we never felt pain, sensation, grief, and we just never processed these things. So that can be also a very common thing. And it's not weird if that happens. As you go forward and as you grow your capacity, you will stub your toe or bump your elbow and you'll be like, ouch, that hurts. And all you experience is that physical activation and that little hit. And that's when you know that you have way less survival stress in your system. For those who have kids, so for the parents here, people will say, My kid is tantruming. It doesn't make sense. Why are these things coming out? Typically, it's because of something that has been stored from way before. Birth was difficult, if there was in utero stress, if there was stress in the home life when baby was little, and all of a sudden as a toddler, they're reacting and doing stuff that doesn't make sense. I don't want to say that it's always the case, but often it is old stuff that they are also releasing. And when you give them space to move that stuff out, you will be surprised how they, as little people, they know how to get it out. They just need the support, the resources, the environment to move that out. All right, next line down. So in other words, don't flood the system. That's the word, flood. Flood is just a word for too much, right? Floods, as we know, are devastating. So we don't want to add too much stimulus, too much activation. Again, we're talking about titration here, right? We want to just do little bits, little bits. When starting out, next line down, when our capacity, that's the word, when our capacity is smaller, we want to aim to not let out too much energy all at once. Energy is the word. Next line. We want to titrate our experiences and experiments as much as we can. So one thing that can occur when we're new to this work, or even when we're not new, we all can fall into this trap, is we get allured. We get mesmerized by, oh, I just processed this piece. Let's just process another piece while I'm at it. It's like that piece of cake was good. I'm going to have four more because it's so good. And then your belly hurts, right? Or you have a crash. It's the same thing. It's this ability to titrate, to know that's enough. And by actually saying to yourself, that's enough. That's enough crying today. That's enough expression of anger. You are also giving yourself a boundary. And that's really important too, right? So this ability to have a boundary with yourself and say, that's enough. And for those who say exercise in the gym, I've seen this before when I worked in gyms, people be like, oh, that feels so good. I'm going to do one more set. Even though you know you were only supposed to do four, and then that's where you blow out your back or you tweak something because you're not listening to that really is enough, right? So our endorphins can push us to do more than we need. So again, this ability to, as much as it can be sometimes difficult, to pull back a little bit, to pull back and wait and then see, okay, tomorrow or the next day, I actually feel pretty good. Okay, I was able to titrate and monitor my capacity. Next week, and this is just a hypothetical, I'm going to try a little bit more. If we think about the gym, it's like, okay, I just did this much. I'm going to add 5 more minutes, or I'm going to add 3 pounds or 5 pounds, and I'm going to keep it within reason. And this is how we build up our capacity in a healthy way. Next heading. Babies have this innate capacity in them. They really do. So for those who've had the fortune, the pleasure of being around little ones, if you hold them, there's a moment where they might start to fuss or look away, or they stop engaging, right? You've got this little one and you're engaging with them and then they look away. That's not because they're sick of you. It's because they felt their threshold. It's enough. And so when they've had enough, that's the word, enough stimuli, they are listening to their internal cues. They're listening to their internal cues and they're like, this is enough engagement. I need to look away. And then of course we need to let them have that. And then typically they will come back to us when we give them that space. Next line, another hallmark of attunement, that's the word, attunement, is being able to recognize this. So this is in relationship to infants, being with them. Another hallmark of attunement is being able to recognize this as the caregiver and support their natural rhythm of approach and avoidance. So it goes the other way. If they need you, you want to connect with them, Just like if a baby's crying, we know now, and we've known this since the beginning of humanity, I think. Baby cries, we need to go to them. There's something that they need. They need connection, they need support, they need attunement, they need safety. So if they need us, we need to approach them. And if they need space, we also need to give them space. Next line. So our birthright. This is something that, again, kids are the best example of this. So our birthright, healthy aggression and the energy of the emotion anger. So I'm sure for those who have had toddlers or been around them, you've seen this. And I've got a little quote, "That's mine." Huh, that's mine, right? They'll grab. So, as the toddler grabs the toy from his brother or sister or whatever, there's this, I want that. I see it. I want it. I'm grabbing it. And then that can cause a meltdown if it's been taken from another kid. And, depending on the age, it's like, you can share. No, have this other toy, right? Depending on the age, that doesn't always work. But that is an expression of healthy aggression and desire. I like it. I see it. I want it. We also see this with food, right? This is a little note when you're raising little ones. The best way that I've learned, and this was through my nutrition courses, we want to give, when of course kids have teeth, lots of choices: vegetables, meats, carbohydrates, crunchy things, hard things. And children will know what is healthy. They will grab for what their impulse is, and they will eat it. So it's the same kind of thing. So the baby tugs on the mom's hair. This is a common thing that I have talked about in other videos. But what often occurs when we don't understand healthy aggression, so if you've got a little baby, mom or dad, if there's like lots of hair or there's chest hair, and they'll pull and they'll pull. I see some guys here have beards, they'll pull on these things. And a healthy response would be, wow, look how strong you are, right? And of course, a baby isn't going to know those words, but they know that the energy of it, it's an excitement. What can sometimes happen, and this was something I was brought into my awareness many, many years ago via Peter Levine, is if you have a mother or a father or a caregiver who doesn't understand and can't feel their own healthy aggression and their own power and life force, and these were Peter's words, not mine. He goes, the person will think that this baby is a little monster because they're grabbing and they're hitting and they're scratching. And often what will occur is that adult will then take the baby away. They'll put them down. They'll disconnect from that life force energy. And I've told this story before, but I'll tell it again. A girlfriend of mine, her baby is not a baby anymore. But when he was a baby, he started, I believe it was, hitting and punching her. And she wasn't, again, wasn't sure what to do. She had some dysregulation in her system, which is totally fine. So she Googled what to do when your baby is hitting and scratching you. I can't remember the exact thing. And Google spat back, hit them back. And this is actually common pediatric advice, is if your baby is hitting and punching and scratching, some people will say, pinch them. So don't hit them, but pinch them so that they get a little bit of a startle, and it conditions them to not do that again. This is very Pavlovian, right? That classic conditioning of dog with food, with salivation. So you can train an infant, a human mammal, to stop their life force energy by hurting them. And this is often the case. Of course, we don't want to do that. So I said to her, the next time I think he was hitting, the next time he hits you, just play with him. Say, wow, I see you're hitting me. Let's play a game. And so what she did is she played a little tug of war with his little hands and played in a fun way and encouraged him to get that energy out. He loved it. And then he never hit her ever again. So it was a way of him exerting his sympathetic, right? That activation of fight. And when we start to get muscles, And well, we always have muscles, but when they get stronger, right, we as little ones want to use them, right? We want to play, we want to pull. And so that is one thing to know when you are around infants. If they're doing that, they're not trying to hurt us, they're feeling their life force, and we need to meet it. We meet that with energy. Now, of course, if we feel scared of that energy, that is an indication that we have to work on our own capacity building, on our own healthy aggression and life force energy. So, and then the final one here, having been around a lot of dogs, I know that kids like to grab tails and pull them. They like to grab cat tails and pull them. What I often have found is usually animals that are well-tempered, they know deep down if it's an infant or toddler to not bite and to not attack, especially when they've been around that infant since the infant was young. But of course, if it's a stranger's animal, that isn't always very good because then you can get bit. So that is where you might need to say to the little one, do not do that. And this comes into that concept of healthy shame versus toxic shame. All right. Next page. Next page. Just caught a fun comment. Someone said, Ellen, I used to bake a cake only for myself some years ago, and I wouldn't share it. Good to know about healthy anger. Yes. So it's something, sometimes treating ourselves to things and having them be all ours is a very, very healing act. So, thanks for sharing that. So, page three. And again, as we go into page three, just remember to stay connected to your basics, ground. Let your eyes come away if they need to, if they need to rest. So, here are some examples of the beginning energies of healthy aggression and life force energy, life force being felt and expressed. So, I've already kind of mentioned this, so I'm a bit ahead of myself, but we'll review this again. So, if the mom doesn't know how to meet that energy. So, it doesn't have to be the mother, it can be the father, it can be the babysitter, it can be the auntie, the grandparent, the care provider. So, if the mother or whomever doesn't know how to meet that energy in a caring and inviting and attuned and encouraging way, so this is the example I gave with my friend, the baby won't feel met and she'll feel a sense of unsafety. So, this is subtle, but you know, that expression comes out. She wants to express, baby wants to express, and it's met with either nothing or it's met with, this is wrong. I am going to disconnect from you. And then the little one feels isolated, right? They're not going to think I'm isolated. It will be a sense of, oh, something's not there. This is what can lead to collapse. This goes back into those polyvagal levels of the autonomic nervous system, right? We're putting our fight energy out there. We're not being met. I'm going to now shut down because I can't get this out and I'm going to protect myself. So that will occur at that little infant level. So without, next line down, without consistent safety and attunement and connection, all the things, you get the slow decline. That's the word, decline. Decline. Of life force energy expression. So it's the shutdown. And we know that that's got that collapse, right? That kind of, to use the example of an animal, the tail between the legs, right? The spine shrinks, it collapses, and it's just not where we want to live if we're wanting to be out in the world and express ourselves. And it can start super, super young. So the next line down is the biological message is that of no acceptance. So essentially, the little one is not being accepted. Their life force energy, their biological impulses are being declined. They're being shut down, essentially. And then I have in brackets there, and when a person doesn't accept you, and this is, of course, not just for infants, it's also for adults, children, teenagers, but when a person doesn't accept you, especially your primary caregiver, you don't accept yourself. This is how far back this goes in our inability to really accept who we are and our unique imprint, our unique, authentic self. It starts that young. It can start much younger than that. It can start in utero, but this is one of those examples of how denying that life force energy can really play a toll. So next line, that energy of non-acceptance, non-acceptance. So that energy, it's really an interaction with that other person. That energy of non-acceptance turns inwards. And this turns inwards to, that's the word inwards, low self-esteem, can be self-hate, and shame. So this would be toxic shame. And we'll get more into toxic shame and healthy shame soon. So, or therefore, right? So this is a, one could say, a very depressing piece of this training call. It's like, whoa, like this is how far back this goes. And the answer is yes. Of course, this is why we're here, is gaining our internal somatic capacity to be able to come out of that collapse, start to get these energies of healthy aggression coming out in titrated ways so that we can reclaim our life force energy. And this concept of I am here and I am meant to be here and I am meant to put my energy out into the world and not collapse inwards around it. So therefore, to reaccess the true self, self is the word, your true self, to access, reaccess this true self, one must tap into their healthy aggression. There's the word again, healthy aggression, and wake up the life force energy that was shut down due to basic survival. That's the next word. Survival responses so long ago. Of course, this is possible. I've done it. Many people have done it. Many SBSMers have done it. Many of our moderators know this all too well. Team members, this ability to get back that life force energy. And sometimes that means we have to get out old survival responses. And of course, this comes back to previous calls where I'm talking about the swimming pools and the beach balls and all the stuff that's inside of us. And remember, long ago, feels like a year ago, we talked about when do you know when to work with a shock trauma or an early trauma? It's hard to know. It depends on each person, depends if there is an accident that is so intense that it's keeping you from feeling, because there's just so much bad memory and so much pain and shock around, say, that car accident. I often use that example. So sometimes we have to work on those pieces first before we can get into this more primal life force energy. And then for some of us, we have to get more primal and get more into those early developmental trauma pieces so that we can work on shock traumas and such. So again, each person, I wish I could say this is how it works, but it's not that cut and dry. Everyone will have to sense, oh, I think I actually have to work on that accident because I still have nightmares around it, for example, right? Or I need to work on this attachment wound. I'm definitely not comfortable around people. So that means that I got to figure out how to resource and connect in the environment and socially engage. So everyone's going to be a little different. So next line down, these are the next few bullet points are all around some of the lessons in SBSM that are specific to working with healthy aggression, working with getting our life force energy back. So the lessons of making sound. Sound is the word via the voo sound or the voo ah. These are classic vibratory sounds that myself and many of my SE colleagues would have learned via Peter Levine. He, of course, co-opted them from other Eastern traditions where you are chanting, you're making various sounds to vibrate the diaphragms and the viscera of the body. So the sound voo, voo ah, gets the jaw open, stimulates parts of the vagus nerve, the belly, the core. So all of these sounds are to help spark up life force energy in small, titrated pieces. So as you'll learn when you get into these lessons, some of you have already, some of you maybe haven't, we don't ask you necessarily to think about anger. It's not about, okay, this is about anger and we're going to work with anger. It doesn't really go in that way. It's just, let's experiment with the sound. It's kind of like if you've ever been around drums, right? And you feel that vibration, or if you've ever been to a symphony and you feel the vibration of the musical instruments. Has anybody had their hairs stand up, you know, when you're around music, or it just shivers through you? That is the sound, that is sound frequency coming into your cells and activating the cellular structure, the water of your body. So by doing the sounds yourself, you are internally creating that energy. So that's one of the reasons why we want to use sound as well when working on growing our capacity. Next line down. So I've already sort of said this, but I'll repeat it. It, so these sounds, voo, voo, ah, helps to mobilize. That's the word, mobilize. That's a fancy word for move, mobilization. That deep, visceral, biological, cellular knowing that you, that I matter, and that you deserve to be alive. That is the word, alive. Again, I always go back to animals in the wild as well. They roar, they make sounds, right? They're not looking for permission to howl at the moon or to growl when something comes up and tries to get their little cubs. Seth and I were just walking the other day and at the lake that we live near, and there was a guy coming in on his truck, and he had a husky dog, and the dog was just howling and so excited because he was going for a walk. And as we walked, we saw him around the trail and he saw us because we connected with the dog, and he was like, rawr, rawr, and he was talking to us, just talking and talking, so excited to be walking. And that, of course, is that breed. They have wolf energy, so they like to make the sounds, right? So ways to titrate our experience with sound is to also watch animals that are making sound, right? There's something quite healing, can be healing about looking and seeing and feeling animals making sound. I think it's also why we love, many of us love listening to music, right? Just hearing those sounds, it activates us. So many ways that we can mobilize this life force energy. Next line down. So this is very different. So these sounds that I'm talking about, these titrated ways of working with these sounds, these vibrations, this is very different from acting. That's the word, acting out, or watching, say, a movie that might spark or produce aggressive reactions and feelings of adrenaline. I'll explain this a little bit more in the next page. So it's very different than acting out an aggressive movement. Page four. So it continues. We'll continue. Last bullet point. So page four. So when I mean acting out, it's these cathartic practices tend to tap into this kind of only outward expression. So the classic one that you'll hear is people will say, oh yeah, to work on healthy aggression, it's good to box. it's good to, learn a martial art or karate or taekwondo. Now, there's nothing wrong with learning how to box, learning karate, taekwondo. I think the martial arts are very good practices to teach discipline and strength and balance and energy and respect. However, even if you are black belt at something, and if you are not listening to your internal sensations and the subtleties of sensation, emotion, these things, you can be masterful at something and fighting, but you actually might still have tons of stored aggression in the body that is a result of, say, early trauma, for example, right? And so this ability to work with the body and get energy out, it's more than just the behavior of punching or kicking. It requires this ability to connect to the internal sensation. So this was reviewed already in part one of Healthy Aggression Handout. So I'll just read this out with the fill in the blank. So we want to connect, that's the word, connect to our internal sensation. So the emotion, I'll give an example in a second, and then move that energy and action out. So it's this ability to really sense somewhere in the core that fire of, oh, I'm so angry, right? It's somewhere in that belly, it's in the heart, it's in the throat. It's in the groin and the organs, and the ability to connect to that sensation that's inside that fires you up with, anger, with aggression. It could even be rage. And then to feel it and connect it then with the movement, as opposed to, okay, I'm just going to punch my arms in the air and get this anger out. It won't work if you don't connect it to that internal impulse. And this is something that is so important when we're working with, for example, I'm going to go back to the biology of stress, video number five, where I talked about stored, if you can recall, the stored traumatic procedural memories. I'll use just a hypothetical. If, let's say, we were attacked at one point and we were not able to fight, right? And we got hurt. It's feeling and going back to that impulse of wanting to fight or wanting to flee, connecting to that, and then moving out the action, the behavior, the rage, whatever it might be, to protect ourselves. And sometimes, often, anger is closely connected to deep grief. If I couldn't have attacked, I couldn't protect myself, or I was so little, I couldn't run away. It was impossible. So there's this bind of wanting to fight, wanting to flee, but knowing I can't. And so I have to shut down and collapse. And in that is often this sense of deep, deep sadness and grief. So that's the other thing, is sometimes we will have to find out, okay, is this really anger that I'm processing, or is it more this need to break down and cry and grieve the situation that wasn't good? There's a great, has anybody seen the movie Good Will Hunting? It's a very old movie. Matt Damon, Robin Williams. It's very easy to find this. It's a clip where they're in his office and Damon is trying to be all cool and I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine. And Robin Williams, he's his therapist. He's like, it's not your fault. And he just says, it's not your fault, over. And Damon kind of pushes him. He's like, stop it. Like, what are you doing? You're screwing with me. You're fucking with me, he said. And Robin Williams just stayed steady and steady. It's not your fault. And then Damon, because it was about him being abused as a child, just breaks down and sobs, and this visceral grief comes out. And it's one of the best visuals, at least I've found, on a movie where it goes through this connection, mutual understanding. Because in this clip, Robin Williams is like, yep, I was also abused as a kid by my father. He was, they connect. He tries to push him away with anger, with fight. And then he just collapses into deep grief. And it's a really touching scene. So that's an example, a great example of it isn't always about the anger. It's sometimes what is under that anger that needs to be felt. Such a good clip. Easy to find on the internet. All right. Keep going. Let's keep going. So the tricky and sticky nature of anger and healthy aggression work. So I sort of alluded to this on the first page, the first sentence, which is why is it so difficult for us to work with healthy aggression and anger in a good way? And as I said, I think it's because we just don't see enough positive, powerful examples in our society, especially Western societies. We often see more native cultures have more ritual, more dance, more drumming, more song, right? More rites of passage for their children, for their adolescents, where there's just more honoring of this life force energy. So, for all of us here who may be more in the world of the West, again, so important to realize this is, I believe, part of our birthright to connect with these sounds and these aggressions and these life force energies. So, however, first line here, it can be tough to imagine a lifetime. So that's the first word, lifetime of stored up anger and aggression coming out in a big, big bang, right? And this is probably one of the top things I have seen my students that I work with more privately with in my trainings, but also when I was in private practice. There will be this, and feel free to say, yep, that's me, where it's like, I can't let this out. Because if I let this out, I might destroy something, I might hurt someone. And that's normal. That makes us realize, okay, we know how much is stored inside. Good to know that cognitively, right? And then go, okay, we need to titrate this out. So we don't even want to imagine. So I say it's tough to imagine. Don't even try to think, how am I going to get all my aggression and rage out in 12 weeks? Never try to think that. Always go back to, how can I just keep growing my capacity? How can I just keep feeling my body when I stub my toe? How can I keep listening to my impulse of when I need to feed myself, when I need to sleep, when I need to speak up? All these things. So, again, just this realism, being realistic about what is possible, knowing that not only us, but maybe our ancestors also didn't have the ability to release their healthy aggression. And even more so for most of us who have parents and grandparents who lived through two world wars and all these things. There's a lot of stuff that kept people from expressing their needs and wants in wartime. So first or next line down. So a person will stop their aggressive impulses. So that's the word stop. Their aggressive impulses, and even just the feeling, that's the word feeling of the anger energy. As they feel, sense, think, it might harm, that's the word harm others. Which I think, isn't a bad thing. It shows that humans, by most part, are pretty good people, and we don't want to harm others. And then, of course, when we know, oh, wow, I've got this chronic illness, I've got this autoimmune thing, and it's because I've stored up my anger because I've had to people please, and I've had to be the perfect person in the perfect suit and the perfect daughter or son. And I've seen all this tough stuff, and I'm not letting this out, right? So, again, this is where titration of expressing these things are so important. And this also comes back to our ability to be around people who we feel safe with, right? If we are in a relationship where our partner will not let us express our healthy aggression, And I don't mean being violent to them, but like our healthy aggression, or say, I don't like that, right? Like having a good relationship means being able to say to your person, that's not cool, right? I don't like this or that, or I need support with this, and them being able to reciprocate, attune, and listen. Very, very important for us to be able to express our needs, especially when we live with someone who is our primary partner. It's a little different around family members, I find, because if you're not living with them, sometimes you just have to make do and know, yeah, not going to be able to tell this to my mother or my father, and it's best that I don't, because it's they're not going to be able to take this information, right? So often I've had students who have said, I tried to tell my mom how much she screwed me up. I'm like, well, if she's not willing to listen and work on her own system, it's actually best, in my opinion, to not even have that conversation, because it's just not going to land, right? And so this is where that would be protective, to actually not engage with people when you know that they're not going to be able to take it in and do something with it, which I know can be very frustrating. But the key to me, for me, is if you live with someone and they're your primary partner, that is the person that you need to be comfortable with. And that obviously for some of us can cause a problem when we know that our main partner is not doing their work, but it is important. All right, kind of went off on a sidebar there. So let's get back to the third bullet point. So this back comes back to us stopping our aggressive impulses, not feeling that we can emit them, emote them. So the other thing, and or a person might stop and not allow themselves to feel it because it was unsafe. This actually goes beautifully with what I just said. Because it feels unsafe to express it. It felt unsafe to express it in the past, right? So, or the expression of anger they knew from the family was explosive, abusive, and terrifying. So everyone here will know their history of anger. For some of you, you saw too much rage and abuse and violence growing up. And then there's some who you never saw your parents even smile or hug or have joy. And both are equally tough to work with, because if you saw enough of it, nothing, you don't know where things are. And if you saw too much, everything might just be scary to enter into. So neither is more or the other. It's just they're still equally tough to work with. So there's often, so next line down, there's often immense shame coupled with these powerful life force sensations and emotions. So there's often immense shame, that's the word, coupled with these powerful life force sensations and emotions. So, you know, again, if you were that kid who tried to exude your exuberance and your life force energy, and it doesn't have to even be anger, but you know, kids like to play and they like to make believe. And I'm sure for those who are parents here, some of the things your kids come up with is just crazy stuff. And that's their little system expressing creativity. And if we were that kid that tried to express it and we were told that's stupid, put that stuff away, make believe isn't real, there's no such thing as dinosaurs and all these things, like that will put that child into a bit of a, okay, well, I guess I can't do this, right? And it starts to teach them to not listen to that creative impulse and that life force energy. So it isn't uncommon when we start to express our authentic self, our life force energy, that quickly after we might feel this immense shame, like, ooh. But it's not accurate. It's old. It's old stuff, no doubt, that is coupled, attached to us from a long, long time ago. And you might have a memory of it, or you might not have any memory of it, right? Yeah. There was a, I'm going to share a story in one of my trainings a few weeks ago with our SPT students. We played a, not a game, it was a script where I had the students say one part of my nervous system story. So, one part of my nervous system story that I'm proud of. So I had them fill in the blank. So you could even think about this in your own head. So I had them all say out loud, not all at once, everybody took turns. One part of my nervous system story that I'm proud of is, and one of the students said, one part of my nervous system story that I'm proud of is the fact that I can actually be proud of something. That was pretty intense. And her family history was such that you can't be proud of anything. You can't be excited about anything. You can't show proudness, right? Triumph. It's a bad thing. You've got to be small and protect yourself and not draw attention to self. And this was someone who was raised in an Eastern Bloc country in Europe. So it made complete sense to me. I was like, ah, that makes sense. So again, this ability to feel this life force energy can swing us to, oh, I don't know if I can do this. This is normal. So this doesn't mean you're going backwards if you feel this. It means that you're dipping into another ball. Let's make it simple, in your pool that was connected to maybe not being able to express this when you were little, or even your ancestors. Might not even have anything to do with you. It could be something that your ancestors experienced. And this is where just go back to the sensation. Don't try to make meaning out of it necessarily. Be like, oh, this feels like tightness in my gut, or this feels like blackness in my heart. I'm just going to sense this. I'm going to connect to the ground. I'm going to orient. I'm going to be with this sensation or this image that I keep getting. And often that can bring us into another level and layer of healing so that we can take that ball out of the pool. All right, next line down. So another commonality. I already mentioned this a little bit. So another commonality, again, this is around anger and healthy aggression and working with it, is having zero, that's the word, zero, null, no model for any kind of life force expression. Meaning the environment was devoid of all emotion, things were shut down, and no sign, any sign of warmth or affection was the rule. Those are the two words. Warmth or affection was the rule. I think the most classic saying that I think many of us have heard is nod to the Brits here, that stiff British upper lip. Hey, Leora, we all know what that is, especially those here in Canada who are Commonwealth countries, right? Just that keep calm and carry on. Nothing's wrong. Everything's fine. We're fine. And yet, under that is these, and literally, you'll see lips that are thin and tight. And it is the held holding in of aggression and impulse to push that out. Some of you will find that as you do this work, you will get fuller lips, fuller cheeks. There'll be more tone in your face because you're getting that expression out. And so this ability to find that balance of expression, knowing when you might need to contain something, but also, what did you see growing up? If the facial expression you saw was stone cold with no life, a child will mimic that face. That's how we build through the vagus nerve, right? You learned about this in the biology of stress videos. That ventral vagal, remember, I'm quizzing everybody, the ventral vagal of the parasympathetic. We gain facial expression by seeing faces and faces moving. We need that to learn speech, how to use our tongue, how to smile. Oh, sadness, anger, happiness, all these things teaches us how to speak, how to express. And so, if our main parents were just void of emotion, we're going to learn that. And then we're going to be confused. And you see this, like if you're walking outside or in a store, does anybody like see babies and you want to smile to them and wave? I always do that, And some children will see you and they'll engage and they'll be so excited, and others will look at you with confusion. And that always makes me a bit sad. because that shows that that little one is afraid of social connection and engagement, right? And so very interesting to just watch when you're out and about, you know, if you smile to a little one, do they smile back to you? Dogs, cats, yeah, you smile at them, they look at you, they turn their head, they also engage, right? But again, if you have an animal that has not been treated well with social engagement, they might be confused when you smile at them. And this is purely physiological. This is our nervous system. It's really how you can see and tell where someone is on a nervous system spectrum, any mammal. So, next line down. The word is titration, hence titration. This just comes back to titration. Broken record, I am titration, titration, titration. Do not underestimate small little bits of work that layer and layer and layer and build up capacity. And eventually that capacity can create a full-on expression of life force energy, anger, grief, sadness, joy, surprise, all the emotions, even disgust, which is something that we'll get into more when we talk about healthy shame and toxic shame. So page five. Page five, last page. And as we get into this final page, just remember to connect to your butts, your chairs, sense your breath, all the things. So, exploring healthy aggression. So, lesson review. So, this is more review. I've already mentioned some of these things, but review is good. So, anger is often associated with tension in the body. Tension is the word. In the body and its muscular system, for the most part. So I can't tell you how many times I have worked with folks or I've worked with myself where there's a tense body part, muscle. Often it's in the core, it's the neck muscles, the trapezius muscles, the hip flexors, wherein if there has been a stored emotion, often anger, there's a tension. And when you work with the emotion and the sensation connected to the emotion, the tension dissipates. Whereas stretching and massaging, while it might feel good, you know, typically, if it's a deeper thing, if that tension, that tightness just pops back. You know, you've got this great massage and the muscles are released and then they're back, right? Now, not always the case. If there is an old injury, say with scar tissue, and there's something in that tissue that's an old shock trauma and it needs a little more help and work, then it might be something more physical. But so often, this tension in our muscles can be a result of held emotion and often expression of anger and healthy aggression. So don't underestimate how working with these pieces starts to release the tension in the body. And I would say it's that sympathetic fight flight tension. Because, right, if you're about to run, if you're about to fight and you don't, that is a lot of muscular energy stored that has not been released. Right. And so, again, this ability to work with this stuff is so crucial for our bodies having flow and ease in the muscles. If we go back to that example of that stiff British upper lip, if you think about that first training call, I think it was the first one where we drew the circles. Remember your masterpiece of drawing the circles and you connected the circles with the lines and that's an example of flow through the body, what we would call coherence. So if this is tight, everything is tight. The throat, the chest, the heart, the viscera, the organs, the groin, the muscles. So when we hold in one area, everything is held. So next line down. Sometimes we need to create, that's the word, create safe, aggressive experiments. That's the word, experiments. To help free up. That's the word, free up. Sometimes we need to create safe, aggressive experiments to help free up stored anger and aggression. And this is what you're learning in some of the lessons in SBSM. This might be some of the stuff if you do work with a somatic practitioner in the future. They might have you do things of pushing and moving to start to mobilize and move some of these tensions in the body. But as I said, the page before, we want it to connect to sensation. It can't just be for the sake of moving, right? Of course, if you haven't connected yet to the sensation of anger, that's okay. But can there be a connection to the lungs, to the guts, to the feeling of your body? So by that, I mean the reason we've been building and building layers since lab one with potent posture. I'm just going to do a review quickly. The joints, the diaphragms, orienting, learning the theory. It's all in service to have more somatic awareness so that when you're doing some of these experiments that I'm about to mention, even though they're kind of contrived and we're saying, okay, do the voo, do the hiss, growl, you can listen to what's inside. Whereas if you don't have that language and ability to listen to the little things that might pop up as you're doing these experiments, you'll miss them. Hope that makes sense. So again, the layering of everything you've been doing up until now is in service of being able to sense internally when this life force energy starts to spark up. So here are some of the experiments, and these are by no means all of them, but just some of them. So experiments, it's just my way of saying movement, behaviors, actions, things you can play with. So experiments for helping to free up this energy are, but are not limited to, accessing the jaw and facial muscles. So that's the first word there. Jaw. The third, or the next one I have, the jaw is the linchpin to anger. Peter Levine said that in a class one day. I thought that was great. Linchpin is like just the thing. It's the entryway into anger. Now, often people think, oh, I've got jaw tension. That must be stored anger. Not always the case. It could be my experience from working with folks. Often jaw tension can be deeply related to old dental trauma, believe it or not. Things where we've had our teeth worked on, braces, that kind of thing, where our jaws have been in a position that aren't natural. And the tension that can arise in the face can be stupendous when we're not aware of how those things that occurred to our mouth impacted us. The voo ah are subtle entry points to unlock held aggressions. That's the one above that. The herd one down. So doing the voo and the voo ah with movements. That's the final word of the page there, movements. So have a look at me and you can play with me if you want. So hands, right? Like our hands can punch, they can grab, they can scratch. These are our protection devices, right? But they also do a lot more, but they are the ones that often go to protect ourselves. So when we connect with the voo and the ah, we're moving our mouth, but sometimes feeling what is it like to grab at the air, or if you get a pillow and you knead at it, right? Or you get something that you can squeeze as you're doing that sound can be really useful to connect these primal instincts of these beasts. I like to call them paws, right? There are paws, there's ability to grab and punch and feed ourselves and all these sorts of things. So the hands, the feet, you can't see my feet, but this ability to like move the feet and curl the toes into the ground and get that primal energy in there. The pelvis, the eyes. You would never see a mother bear close her eyes as she's growling at a potential threat to her cubs. Would never happen. Or a lioness. The eyes are open and they're looking. And so this is another element where so often our somatic mind-body work, there's a lot of teaching, keep your eyes closed, listen to the breath, be calm. But if we are moving our healthy aggression, life force energy, a kid doesn't play with their eyes closed, right? They don't. Got to have your eyes open as you're doing these movements so that you can alert and see what is around you. Snarling the lip is an interesting one. Baring the teeth, biting. So this comes back to that stiff British upper lip. You know, like if there has been no movement and life in this mouth, it can be actually very powerful to start to bare the teeth, right? Or snarl the lip a little bit. Or imagine biting, right? Biting something. It can actually really relieve jaw tension. If we get there's devices that you can bite into. Apples are really good for this, actually, if you like apples. Biting into something that's a food, gnawing on a bone, like these are actual things that give us that ability to move our teeth and our jaw. So I know they've got all sorts of tools and toys that you can bite on that are quite safe, that can get that biting reflex going. Growling, you know, I'll growl, grr, you know. Is it, does it, right? Is it comfortable to do that? Or is hearing growling actually cause a little fright in your body? That's something really important to listen to. If you see someone being angry in a healthy way or growling or hissing, and it kind of creates a little bit of fear in your body, that's really important information because that shows that your system isn't quite ready for yourself to start to express that. Right. So that's where, okay, go back to capacity building. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. But it's just to be aware of these things. Hissing sounds. So if anybody's been around where we live, there's lots of geese. Technically, they're called Canadian geese. And if you've ever tried to go close to those little goslings, their babies, when they're born, those geese will chase you and they'll hiss because of the way their mouths are. They don't growl, but they hiss, and it's this high-pitched hiss. And again, that is their protective energy to their little babies, their little goslings. So you see all this really interesting stuff in the wild. Pushing with the hands can be very useful, but you usually need pressure. So sometimes people will push the wall. One really good way, you know, those big physio balls that people sit on and they bounce on. If you take that ball and you put it against a wall standing, that's a nice way to push because it gives some give, right? Whereas just pushing a wall, I find, isn't as rewarding because there's no texture to it. Stomping the feet can be really useful. Standing up, you know, if you're feeling some energy in your legs and you're not sure what's going on, stand up and stomp your feet a little bit, march on the spot. Just feel what it's like to get that life force energy into the legs. Saying no, saying stop, stop that. So again, sometimes words can help us move healthy aggression out. I've already mentioned this a little bit, but movements to hit, punch, scratch. Scratching is actually a pretty un, we don't think about it too much, but that's a very primal movement to scratch and just use our nails. So all ways in which we can start to experiment with getting healthy aggression out. And I'll again remind everyone, it isn't just about doing it for the sake of doing it. It's really still connecting to the internal, right? Of course, there's nothing wrong with doing these movements. Chances are it won't connect, though, to what's stored inside. And then, of course, that goes back to this ability to be interoceptive. If I bring in that fancy word again, right? This interoception feeling on the inside. What is it like to even consider doing some of these things, right? Does it seem fun? Does it seem exciting to play with these? Or does it seem like a little, I'm not so sure? And so, again, that's where you have to listen and be like, okay. My system might not be ready to get these big energies out, and that's okay. And that's where you go back to building the foundations with the earlier lessons, the diaphragms, the joints, orienting all the ones that are more devoted, we could say, to building up that foundation and that capacity. Whereas working with the healthy aggression, while you will build capacity by getting that out, working with healthy aggression, it's more of an active process. It's more of a behavior-based process while connecting to the internal sensations, emotions, memories, history. All right. Good work, you guys. We are done for this one. That's the final page, I believe. Yes. So as you go into your week, whether you're on these lessons or not, you've heard the theory, you've heard the concepts. Just start to sense and notice if things start to bubble up that might be little hints of these life force energies coming up, these healthy aggressions coming up. Someone just wrote in the comment, I'll read it out for those that aren't here live. I just had an intense cramp in my leg a few minutes ago. Switched off my video and went off with the laptop and stamping my feet in the hall and to feel into an area. So great. So these are the things that you want to try to follow and listen to when you might start to feel. In this case, cramps can often be a sign that there is an energy, a sympathetic energy that wants to move out, right? And if we try to stretch it out or try to breathe it out, it might not necessarily get that fight flight energy out. So this is where in our journey with SBSM, really listen to these impulses, and good job for this person following impulse and moving with some stomping of your feet. Good work. All right, thank you to my team for being here, keeping an eye on things, Susan and Carrie. Thank you. And thanks to all of you, alum and newbies. And we will see you next time. Seth will do your Q&A this Thursday. And yeah, happy November. We'll see you next time, everyone. Bye.